Two saints in a row. This is the Max Level Podcast. Welcome home. From the uninitiated, Max Level is a weekly breakfast powwow brought to you by RPGera.com. I am your host, Brian, and joining me on the show this morning, he is the co-host of Blood and Destroyers, an All Elite Wrestling podcast every Monday, and a co-host of The Fans Are Way Too Noisy. It is Sev.
Well. It's nice to be back. It's nice to be on a good podcast rather than this podcast I've got going on, the dumbest podcast on YouTube.
It's been a minute since you've been on Max Level, hasn't it?
It has. It's been a while, yeah.
Thunderdome, was that the last time we heard from you on this show?
It might actually be, yeah. I'm looking forward to the next Thunderdome. That shouldn't be far off, should it?
No, next Thunderdome will be beginning of October. So, yeah, nice. That'll be a fun one. Q4, always some big releases. Some good JRPGs coming out in Q4 as well.
What JRPG can I get to number one? Yeah, make it free for free.
Exactly. Special shout out to Occam's Laser for a majority of the music you hear today during the show. Go check him out wherever you can find music and people, including YouTube, Spotify, SoundCloud, Bandcamp, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You won't be disappointed. Please take a moment and do us a favor, be so kind. Head on over to Apple Podcasts or whichever app you've chosen to listen to us on and drop us a quick rating and a review. It really does help us out in terms of visibility so that this show continues to grow. And remember, we are on Patreon now as well. Patreon.com/RPGera. Check out our tiers, see what we're doing, and if you feel inclined, toss us a couple bucks each month. If not, continuing to listen to the episodes as they upload each week works wonders as well. And of course, special shout out to current executive producers, Jexax and Zadku. All right, Sev, this what's new with you as we transition into that this week. I didn't even do the high voice. What's new with you? There we go. This is basically like what's new with Sev this week, right? Like, We are talking two games that you were really, really looking forward to, two games that you actually tasked yourself with reviewing for RPGera.com, one of those that we're going to talk about a little bit later. You've already written the review for, and that will be posted by the time this podcast actually uploads on Tuesday. The review is going to post tomorrow on Monday, so you can actually go check that out over on our website. I myself have played both of these games, one more than the other, but before we talk about these two games, I have fallen really, really back into the World of Warcraft bug, dude.
Into the what, sorry?
I have fallen back into the World of Warcraft bug. I have been playing a lot of WoW.
Okay, wait, that word was cutting out, so I couldn't even say why.
I have been playing a lot of it lately.
Tell me more.
You know, man, I took the time off, right? Like, I took some time off from playing Warcraft. And then Dragonflight was announced, and I was really, really into the changes that Blizzard were going to be implementing for the Dragonflight expansion. And then I got access to the Friends and Family Alpha from some contacts at Blizzard, which was super nice. So I was able to jump in and really start messing around with the Alpha and really enjoying what I was seeing, and that led me to pick back up the retail version of Warcraft and start leveling my, because I never actually got a character. Right now in the retail WoW, the level cap is 60 because they went through, you know, a level squish and item level squish and everything, right? Because the level cap for a while there was like 120 or some crazy shit like that. And then with the expansion last time, so Battle for Azeroth, they took it down to 50. That was the level cap. And then with the Shadowlands expansion, they went from 50 to 60. And now with Dragonflight coming up, they're going back from 60 to 70. So they don't want you like to get like insane levels, which is why they keep doing this item level squish and things like that. But I never got a character to max level, so to speak, in the current Shadowlands expansion for World of Warcraft. So before Dragonflight releases, which rumors are the pre-patch for Dragonflight is going to be out in the end of October, like around October 25th, and then the expansion will launch on November 28th, if leaks are to be believed, and they probably are true because it's the same leaks that had the Wrath of the Lich King Classic for World of Warcraft dates in there, and those turned out to be correct. So it's probably true, unless things obviously get bumped or pushed around. But I wanted to get my at least one character up to 60 and experience the story of Shadowlands before it, you know, became irrelevant. So I have my shaman. He's the one I chose to kind of focus on. And I've got him up to level 58 now. So I'm two levels to go to hit max level. I'll finish out the storylines. I might jump a little into like the looking for raid, the easiest version of the raids that I don't have to think about, right? You just queue up for it. It puts you with a bunch of other people and you run through the raids. I might do that leading up to the release of Dragonflight just to see the stories in those raids. But I'm more just waiting for Dragonflight to come out. And I think once it does, I'm going to start a new Evoker, which is the new class that is releasing for Dragonflight. It's a heal DPS class. I'm really enjoying it on the alpha, so I'm probably going to try to see if I can stick around and really get invested in Warcraft again, because I'm having a lot of fun. But I'm also prepping for the release of Wrath of the Lich King Classic, because Wrath of the Lich King is my favorite World of Warcraft expansion of all time. Like, I really do like the Burning Crusade, the one that's currently on the classic servers right now for Warcraft. That one is one that really, you know, where I got my start with raiding, and I really fell in love with a lot of the stuff about it. But Wrath of the Lich King is where I became a legitimate raider, where I met a lot of friends that I still have to this date through Warcraft. And when I played it the most, right? Like, I was playing several hours a day all the fucking time. And I'm really looking forward to re-experiencing a lot of that. And Kyle actually hit me up over the past few weeks and told me that he and a couple of his real life friends that he plays Warcraft with and some guys that they know are going to be raiding in Wrath Classic once it releases. So the pre-patch for Wrath Classic drops on August 30th, this Tuesday, the day that this podcast will post, hopefully, if all goes according to plan. The pre-patch for Warcraft Wrath Classic will be out then. And then the actual expansion launches on September 26th. I am going to be, at least if all goes according to plan and things don't fall apart, I'm going to raid with them. And I'm going to be focusing on my Paladin in Wrath Classic. They do play Horde, so it'll be the first time that I've actually really played Horde for the most part. But I'm looking forward to it, man. I have been having fun with Warcraft again. Like I said, Blizzard has made some improvements in terms of their culture and behind the scenes shit. They've brought in some new people. They brought in some new developers. They scooped up the team that was behind, what was that game that was a battle royale that was like magic based? Started with an S. Spellbinder? Was that a game?
Sounds familiar. I'd say something like Spellcraft or something.
Spellbreak. Yeah, they scooped up that team to help out with, you know, developing future World of Warcraft expansions. And I feel like what that team is bringing to the table for Dragonflight is definitely improving some of the dullness and boringness that Warcraft was experiencing. So I think Warcraft could potentially be in a good spot with Dragonflight looking like one of the better expansions to come out in a while, which I don't know if you saw. I actually scooped it up on Fantasy Critic because I'm expecting it to get high reviews when it does come out.
I don't want to talk about Fantasy Critic.
Your Fantasy Critic is shot this year.
Cursed. It's so cursed. If you want a game to be delayed, just let me know. I'll put it on my Fantasy Critic and I'll go.
I dropped Oxenfree 2 to pick up Dragonflight. I'm expecting it to be good, but I'm also expecting Warcraft Classic to be in a really good spot because Wrath of the Lich King is a majority of Warcraft fans' favorite expansion. So I have a feeling a lot of people are going to come back to re-experience that again and play through it all over again. Warcraft could be set up for a big resurgence here over the next couple years. So we'll see what happens. I've just been really getting invested in that, which is why I haven't had a ton of other gaming time for other games. Now, I have been playing some other games, like the two we're getting ready to talk about, and I'm still trying to finish Cult of the Lamb. I'm still putting some time into Xenoblade Chronicles 3 here and there. I'm not neglecting the reviews, right? I'm still, you know, working on reviews for Curse to Golf, which is a really hard fucking game. I don't know if you've had a chance to check that out yet at all, but I am struggling in that game. It is brutally difficult, but I do want to get that done so the review gets posted here soon. Just a lot going on in gaming right now, man, and it's not going to slow down anytime soon. We've got more games coming. We got 6 to talk about later on in the new release roulette. There's just so much shit releasing right now. But here I am, back in Nazaroth, back in Warcraft land.
In the old World of the Warcraft.
World of the Warcraft, indeed. Indeed, indeed. But that's really what I've been up to outside of the games that we're about ready to talk about. So like I said, this is more about like what's new with Sev. These are two games that I know you were really looking forward to experiencing and playing. And I want to kick things off with a game that you bought and are a big fan of this franchise, and that is the Saints Row reboot. So kick this off. Tell me about it.
Okay, so I didn't know we were going to go with this one first. I had a couple of like delivery issues, as I was telling you earlier. It was dispatched on a Friday. I didn't actually end up getting it till the Wednesday. I put it in and there was a big install and my internet's slow, so it was like, oh, I didn't get to play it Wednesday, and I worked all day Thursday, Friday morning. So, and then I did my review for the other game that we're going to talk about Friday evening. So I've only actually put like maybe 4 or 5 hours into it, but unfortunately I was unable to stay away from all the reviews that have come out for it already. And when I review something, I kind of I like to stay as blind as possible, so my opinion doesn't get influenced by what everyone else is saying. But I do know that this opened. It opened at like a 66 on OpenCritic.
It's not good.
It was much lower than I anticipated it to be, and much lower than I think a lot of people anticipated it to be.
Still sitting at a 66 as of right now with 120 critic reviews, dude. It is getting blasted.
I'll change that. You'll change
that. I don't know if you can, man.
But yeah, there were in these reviews, some people say it's like it's just very much the same and nothing breaks the mold. And then there were some higher reviews of people being like, this is exactly what I expected and this is exactly what I wanted. And I'm really enjoying it. And I kind of sit in that camp, if I'm honest, Brian. Like, I know what Saints Row games are because I played them all. I was expecting a lot of drivey, shooty, a couple of sneaky. And a bit of like, do you know what I mean? A bit of craziness and wackiness going on. There have been many times where I have laughed out loud in the time that I've been playing. Quite a few of that is down to bugs and mishaps that have happened. Like, I had this golf cart and I was stealing this golf cart trying to get it back to the garage, and I was being chased by the police. But because the golf cart was so small, every time the police car like hit my golf cart, they were just going like up and over and off the bridge. So they weren't actually getting me. That was quite hilarious to see. Like, I don't think the hit detection was supposed to be knocking me, but a couple of occasions, like, the cop car would just hit me and, like, fly straight over me and off the bridge, and it was beautiful to see. There is some sort of, like, murmurs about people not liking the new Saints Row crew, because they're not, like, Johnny Gat and the previous ones. They're kind of more like millennials. No, people don't really like the millennials, or the Gen Zers. I'm not sure which ones they are. But it's not. They're a fairly funny ragtag bunch of people, and they live in this apartment, and they've got no money, and like the electric's run out and they can't pay their bills. And it's set in Santo Alicio, and Santo Alicio's got this weird thing where like internet crime's pretty much accepted. Like, these guys aren't like, oh, we can't make rent, how do we make some money?
Yeah, let's go rob a payday loan store.
Yeah, they're just like, let's go rob something. Like, one of them belongs to the Idols gang, one of them belongs to the Los Panteros gang, you belong to the Marshall gang at the beginning of the game, and you all live in the same house, and you have like this roommate agreement where I think it's like, if you kill a member of the other person's squad, you have to do the dishes for like 2 weeks or something. Yeah, do you know what? It's quite funny. There are some wacky things now, in tone down tremendously from the last two previous Saints Row games, and you can tell that like near the beginning. Like, I don't think there was any like big purple weapons.
Yeah, no big purple dildos. I was disappointed. No,
there isn't. And then like even the car shop, which was originally for the first four games, has been called Brim Jobs, but it's not now. And a guy called JR owns it, so it's called Jim Robs. So they've kind of like, they've just switched it around, but that's the only one who knows what it previously called. It's very, very funny. And it's no longer like crude, if you get me. So I think this game very much works. It works for people who are massive Saints Row fans, who enjoy the craziness of like the open world, and just riding around and shooting stuff and watching stuff blow up and being funny. Like, I found this weapon that was, it's just like a punching glove on the end of a gun. So you hit it and it like extends an arm, and I did burst out laughing because I ran to the street corner, found a hoe, and I just headshotted her with this punch thing in it. It's 20 seconds of absolute dumbness, but it was very, very funny.
So here's what I have to say about the cast of Saints Row. Mm-hmm. I actually dig the cast. I think that so far, the four main characters that, and you only play as one, right? You play as the one that works in the Marshals, like the military crew, and you get to customize him or her. And I thought that was a nice touch. And I kind of dig the main character and his three roommates. I actually think they're a good bunch. I think they gel well together. And I like the dynamic and chemistry between the four of them. I think that's a strong point of this game. However, everything else to me in this reboot of Saints Row feels very, very outdated. Like, it's not doing anything new to advance the formula. Like, for this being a reboot, it's not doing anything to advance the formula. It's more of the same old, same old. So you saying that this is a fan that Saints, or this is a game that Saints Row fans are going to love, I fully agree with you on that. And I am not a massive Saints Row fan. I've played all of them as well. I haven't played some of the side mission games that have come out, right? Like, I've played one, two, and three. Yeah, like, I didn't play Get Out of Hell, but I have played the numbered entries of Saints Row, and I've played them to completion. But I would not consider myself a Saints Row fan. I am more of a Grand Theft Auto fan than I am a Saints Row fan, because I feel like Rockstar reinvents the Grand Theft Auto formula each time they put something else out. So to me, this reboot of Saints Row feels super outdated to the point where I'm about 4 hours in as well. So I feel like we are probably, I've done four or five of the main story missions, a couple of the, you know, missions going out and working for your friend, your roommate's friend, that just to get some cash, right? Like going out and doing, you know, getaway drives and that kind of stuff. I've done a couple of that shit. And I've explored a little bit of the open world, but this open world isn't that fun for me to explore. I'm not liking it.
I think Grand Theft Auto and Rockstar have the luxury of being a creme de la creme sort of team, like a top tier with a massive, massive budget. Whereas I don't think Volition have the same sort of resources to spend all that money. I do see like this Saints Row has expanded in the way that like they did customization, like they wanted everything to be customizable. They kind of went that route. I do like this open world, to be fair. It feels very much like in the same way I harken to Ease 8 feels really nice, because it's like an island getaway RPG. It kind of feels like an RPG on holiday.
Okay.
And this Saints Row is like a departure from Stillwater and Steelport, and it's not like a big, like a metropolis. It's sort of like a Mexico, was it like a Las Vegas sort of town? There's a lot of like deserts and neon lights and stuff like that. So it does feel a bit more open. So yeah, it kind of feels like it's a holiday sort of Saints Row rather than it being Saints Row in a city. I just had massive amounts of fun. Like I've done like six or seven of the main story missions. I've got the church, which is where your Saints Row base is. But since getting that, I haven't done any or many other main story missions. I've just been clearing stuff off the map. Like you can go and some of the collectibles are like dumpster diving. So I dumpster dived in one, and it was like, oh, you've got a new hat, and the hat was a pizza box that we wear on your head. So I'm now wearing a pizza box on my head. Like my character looks like a WCW Eddie Guerrero, like big hair, big mustache, but he's got all four of his limbs are prosthetic, so prosthetic legs and prosthetic arms. He's got a pizza box on his head. He's got a nice little cowboy lady sort of twisty up top, which holds his boobs up, and then he's got nothing on the bottom, so he's running around butt naked.
That sounds like a character you would make.
Yeah, and it's just not, like, I'm leaning into it. It's just meant to be fun. I'm not taking it serious. The other thing I really like is the radio stations. I like just getting in the car and whizzing around the town. One of my favorite things to do in Vice City was just to get in
and drive and listen to the music. Hell yeah.
Yeah, stick on like Wave 103 and just burn around in like this one loop that I'd made for myself. And that's all I do day after day. And this very much feels like I jump in the car and there's a great synthwave radio station.
That's my favorite radio station that I found, because I've not found, and I could just be missing it at the wrong times, but I don't think there's like a rock music radio station in this game.
There's, I think it's called like, it's not called Municipal Waste, it's called like Nuclear Waste or something, but it's right at
okay,
the
so
end of
I
the
did
list.
See, I did see Nuclear Waste, but when I put it on, it was like a podcast or something.
Okay, so I'm not sure why they were talking there, but yeah, that is your like heavy metal, death metal sort of.
Unless it was just the story mission that I put the radio station on that overrode what the radio station was playing.
Yeah, Saints Row does do this thing like, like once you've done a mission, you get like news reports of like, oh, this bank has been robbed and these people have been kidnapped or whatever. But yeah, there's a nice tumbleweed, which is kind of akin to Kane Rose from San Andreas. Then there's a pretty good dubstep and dance radio station. There's even like Flex, which is like modern mumble rap, which you know has some like heavy bass lines in it. And I'm not one that usually listens to much music because I struggle to separate music from voice, so I tend to turn voice right up. But because this game's making my PS4 so goddamn loud, I've put my headphones in, have turned my headphones right up. So I'm hearing like every beat and every bass drop. That's probably why I'm enjoying the music more. But yeah, old school hip hop, you got like country rock and all this sort of stuff. There's a good mix of radio stations in there to suit any mood, and they all kind of work when you're blasting down the freeway, being chased by cops, trying to do a
like
wheelie with your bike.
I do like the synthwave. I do like the synthwave station. That's been my favorite find so
far. Yeah, I thought you would.
Yeah, I do like that. Now, you said you're playing this on PS4 and it's making your PS4 super loud. How does it run on PS4? Because I'm playing it on PS5 and I have it set in the settings to be running at 2K, focusing on quality over performance. And I'm getting a solid 50 to 60 frames per second in 2K with HDR on and everything. So it's actually running pretty good on the PS5.
Okay, so I'm going to say it's probably, I've not had any frame rate stutters. I have had a few like bugs and glitches, a little bit of pop in, but the pop in tends to be like when you first load the game up and it loads into the world. But yeah, I'm not, apart from like the bugs and glitches, I'm not seeing like frame rate issues.
And are you just playing on 1080 then for PS4?
Yeah, I don't think it gives you like a performance option.
It probably doesn't. Yeah, it probably doesn't now that I think about it. I think what they have here with this reboot of Saints Row is potentially a foundation to improve on, right? Like, I don't think this is a spectacular game, but I think it does a lot of things right for the future going forward. And if the team can build on this whenever they put out a sequel to this reboot, it could be better than this. And I'm curious to see if they are going down that route.
Yeah, like with number four, they went into like superpowers and alien invasions. It's like when you go so far into like they threw everything at the wall, there was only the next game was only ever going to be a step back. There's no way to go once you hit the top. So yeah, I'm okay with how this has turned out so far.
We'll see how it goes. I'm curious to see what your ultimate review will be once you get through a majority of this game and sit down to actually score it and write some thoughts out. Like I said, it's not something that is jumping out to me as like a must play title this year. I think this is easily skippable. If you are not a fan of Saints Row and if you've never played a Saints Row game, there's no reason to jump into this game. But if you do like Saints Row and you liked the formula and you liked the wackiness and the craziness, this game does still have elements of that. It is still fun to just, you know, be lawless and be in an open world, though I do think this open world is a little dull at times. I think if you're a fan of Saints Row, you're probably going to enjoy this game. So that's what I got on Saints Row. Now, we have another game to talk about that you just wrote a review for that I've not read yet because I didn't want to read this review before we talked about it here on the show because I wanted my thoughts on this game not to be influenced by your thoughts on this game. I don't even know what you scored this at yet. So the next game that we're going to talk about here for What's New With You is one that just released on Xbox Game Pass over the last week, and that is Midnight Flight Express. So tell me about this game.
So Midnight Flight Express is a, for all intents and purposes, is like a modern brawler. You play a guy called Babyface. And the story is kind of set up very weird in that, like, it starts off with you in a police cell recalling the events of what happened.
Yeah, they ripped off Persona 5.
Yeah, it starts off with like an Alice in Wonderland quote. And we even get something later where you're called Prisoner 24601, which is obviously a call to Les Mis. But yeah, so there are lots of references in here. But yeah, you start off in a prison cell, in a prison interrogation room, recalling what's just happened. But like, yeah, within the first like 3 minutes of the game, a drone is delivered to your door. It tells you you're a sleeper cell agent or something. It says something some magic words, and now suddenly you're like a fighting badass and you need to go and take down D. He's just known as the boss of the city, and you're then led on this quest to find out where this boss is and take him down. But the story kind of, it drip feeds it to you via this drone and via callbacks to the interrogation room where they just like say they don't believe you and stuff like that. So it's kind of, it's quite hard to keep up with like all the little bits of the story, but then the big story beats kind of like they kind of just present themselves and you can understand it, so you don't really need to stick with all the dialogue to understand what's fully going on here. But it's not really about the story. Like, the meat and potatoes is the combat. Like, this is, for all intents and purposes, just a game built about being a brawler. And they had,
I'm barely paying attention to the story as it is.
Yeah, so I mean, like, most of it is fairly skippable. But it does have like some twists and turns and some intrigue, and is, but it is serviceable, to be fair. But the meat and potatoes is the fighting, and the fighting was like, it was all mocapped by some team in America, but they had like the guy from who was part of the mocap team for God of War, he's in it. But yeah, they mocap for like for days and days, and we covered it on the Fans Are Way Too Noisy, like the exact number of how many scenes they were doing every day and all that sort of stuff. So when you know that and you sort of like pay attention to how the guy's fighting, like he can do German suplexes and like big spin kicks and all this stuff, it all looks really, really cool. The fight, I don't want to spoil my opinion before I know what you say on the fight.
Okay. So here's what I've got. I went into Midnight Fight Express seeing how it opened on Open Critic, right? Seeing again that this game, I didn't read any reviews, but I did see on Open Critic that it wasn't like scoring spectacularly, right? Like, it opened pretty on the lower end, but I think right now I just checked, it's sitting at a 77, which is actually not terrible, right? For a game like this, not terrible at all. I didn't know if I was going to enjoy this game. I get in, I start playing, this fucking banger of a song kicks in, and I'm like, holy shit. This instantly gave me like, not like super synthwave vibes, but reminded me a lot of how I felt the first time I kicked in Katana Zero. And when Katana Zero instantly hooked me with the music, Midnight Fight Express instantly hooked me with the music. And I was like, okay, maybe we got something here. And I get in and I start playing and the combat is really fucking fun. Like, I really enjoy the combat. I enjoy the ability to, you know, pick up and utilize whatever is in the environment to just throw at enemies, or you can utilize it as a weapon, like a bat or a knife or a gun or a chair. You can pick up explosives and just chuck it at enemies. And stringing these combos together to try to get high scores, which I've not been able to beat any of your high scores on any of these levels yet. I have been trying.
Okay.
You and I both have, I think you played it on the Series S. I'm playing it on the Series X. So we both played it on the console version of Game Pass. So I see your high scores. I've not beaten any of them yet.
Okay.
But
levels I have done absolutely terrible on. So I wouldn't be surprised if you do beat me in some later levels.
Okay. Well, I think for the opening, and I think I've done 4 missions so far in Midnight Fight Express. I don't know how many there are. I do think this game is probably on the shorter end, if I had to guess. Most beat 'em up brawlers are. I'm about 4 or 5 missions in.
Okay, there's 40 missions in it.
Okay, so, but each one feels like it can be completed in less than 5 minutes.
Yeah, I thought that. I say the average about 3 to 8 minutes, but there are some where I died a bunch of times and struggled. So some levels were taking me upwards of like 14, 15 minutes.
Okay. So that's not terrible for a game like this, right? Like that would put it as a playtime maybe around what, 6 to 8 hours, depending on how fast you get through some of these levels.
Yeah.
That's not terrible. And if it holds up like throughout, like if it stays as fun as it has been for the short amount of time that and I probably am maybe an hour and a half total in the game, right? Like, again, I might have replayed 2 of these missions a couple times trying to beat your high score, first of all, and I couldn't. But I do think that when all is said and done, I will like Midnight Fight Express more than I like Saints Row for the games we're talking about this week. I think the soundtrack is really fucking catchy. The music gets you pumped for all of these levels, and the variety of enemies that get thrown your way, the way that you have to tackle the different types of enemies, you know, breaking their stances or breaking their guards or dodging the bullets or whatever the case may be, I'm really digging the combat. And I actually think Midnight Fight Express is not that bad of a game. I do like this one.
Yeah, so I was very high on it in the beginning. As you say, using the weapons and stuff, there is a really cool moment where I think the first time I was taught how to chuck a chair or kick a chair, I walked into a room and there were like six chairs around this one table. So I was just
I remember that room.
Just like kick every one of them or just chuck every one of them. And you just were like, ha-ha, maniacally laughing as you smack guys with chairs and stuff. So the weapon combat is really fun. The issue it does have later on, and I brought it up in my review, is the guns. It does tell you when like gun people start turning up that like enemies with weapons will be more aggressive, but you do get to later levels where there are enemies with like four, five or six of them will have guns and they will just empty their clip at you, and it's not like you don't get a chance to or defend yourself or do anything. So those, they end up being like more of a test of patience and luck that you can just scrape through this thing without getting shot so many times that you have to restart. Like there were times where, like, because the restart is really quick, you die and you just press A and it like restarts you just before the fight starts. There were times where I was dying within the space of like 2 or 3 seconds of restarting, and like I didn't even have time to dodge or roll or anything. They were just boom, and off I was gone, and it was happening like time after time, like in a row. And then there are instances where there are like enemies that can instant kill you if they get to you. And that's not terrible in itself. It's just terrible when they rush you from outside of the screen, so you don't get like an alert that they're coming. They just run in with it within a second. They've grabbed you and they say you've got to restart the level again.
Speaking of the city, I like the dystopian cyberpunk setting.
Yeah. The city itself works beautifully. Like as I said, there are 40 missions. And you go from different place to different place, and they are always varied. There's always a different variety, like the music always pumping. It's always upbeat and it's always like keeping you invested. So I had a really good time with Midnight Flight Express, to be fair.
I think I am too. Like I said, I'll see if my opinion changes a little bit the further in I get, and if I get frustrated like you kind of did for some of these later missions. I'm just playing on normal. I'm assuming you did as well, because that's the scores I'm seeing. So they do have the ability to do like custom difficulties where you can set how much health you have, if the enemies, you know, how hard they hit. Like the custom and accessibility to get through this game if you are struggling is kind of nice. The only thing I saw is if you use the custom difficulty, your scores don't count. Like you won't actually show up on the leaderboard or anything like that, which is kind of disappointing. But I get it. It makes sense. You're making the game easier. So I do think that this is a fun little game that I probably would not have played had it not come to Game Pass. So that's why I really like Game Pass for discoveries like this, because, again, it's fun. It's not a terrible game. And the soundtrack, it really makes me want to sit down and listen to it. I have not done that yet, and I don't know if it's available. I'm sure it will be at some point. I want to listen to it from start to finish, because I honestly think this soundtrack is one of the stars of the show.
Yeah, it's done by a composer named Noise Cream, I think. Look it up. But yeah, even if you don't find this on Game Pass, if it's under like $20 or £20, like if you're into brawlers, there is a load here. Like once you finish a level, there are like 3 challenges in the level. There are like gold teeth and NPCs, and then also Brian says like the scores, you can try and beat your friend's scores and stuff. And there's 40 levels, so 40 times 3 plus all the others. This is a very meaty package for what you're getting. On Game Pass, it's an absolute steal, but if you pick it up on Steam or PlayStation, then it's still actually, so it is worth the investment if you like brawlers.
Nice. I do like brawlers, as we talk about. We got a brawler compilation coming out this week that I know you and I are both excited for. So do like some brawlers. Go check it out if you have Game Pass, Midnight Flight Express. It's worth it. But that is what's new with you, and let's jump into the Sean Waltman Lightning Round. Sev, we have a ton of stuff to go over for the lightning round this week. As we know, Gamescom 2022 was this past week. And for our main discussion later on, we do have some thoughts and a wrap-up for Gamescom. You and I came prepped with a handful of games each that we're going to be talking about that really stuck out to the two of us during the opening night live presentation, the future game show presentation, and just some other stuff, you know, that appeared during Gamescom. So we're not going to cover everything that happened at Gamescom in the lightning round, but a majority of this stuff here as well was confirmed at Gamescom as well. I don't know if we will get through all of this in 10 minutes, so this lightning round may be a bit longer this week. The lightning round begins right now. PID Games and developer Hello Penguin Team have announced Vernal Edge for PC, PS4, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch. A release date was not yet announced. Welcome to the Kingdom of Heracot. Years ago, the land took to the sky, becoming a mysterious series of floating islands where the power-hungry Church of Aloe now rules with an iron fist. Enter Vernal, a young woman bent on finding her estranged father. With the help of some abnormal martial prowess and an amnesiac automaton named Shervil, she'll need to make her way across this mysterious land if she wants to satisfy her need for revenge and the truth. Take control of Vernal in this beautiful pixel art Metroidvania, unravel the secrets of her past and the mysteries of Heracot as you battle your way through this broken kingdom. This is like a hairdresser game almost. Like even the logo for the game, it has like scissors and shit, right? Like Vernal Edge and the Kingdom of Heracot instead of Haircut. I kind of, in the Church of Aloe, right? Because Aloe is used a lot for that kind of stuff. I kind of like where some of this inspiration is being drawn from. But this game here, man, when I first saw it get announced, I actually thought this looked gorgeous. And this is a game I definitely have on my radar now.
Yeah. I think this looks dope, to be honest.
Yeah.
I didn't pick up all the hair references. I just got haricot as in like haricot beans. But yeah, this does look dope.
Yeah, this looks super cool.
Nippon Ichi Software has announced Disgaea 7, the latest numbered entry in the mainstay RPG strategy series for PS5, PS4, and Nintendo Switch. It will release on January 26th in 2023 in Japan, with an English version likely to arrive later in 2023. In Disgaea 7, the story is set in a world called the Himenoto Neverworld Cluster, which is inspired by Japanese culture. Our heroes will fight through the world in order to regain their lost Bushido. Many character designs by Takehito Harada will appear, and the Disgaea series signature replayability feature and the over-the-top battle system have been further advanced.
I'm sure you're excited about this, right?
Oh, I love me some Disgaea 7, and I haven't finished Disgaea 6 because the new replayability feature made it a little too easy. So it's kind of, I might go back to it. I've got to chapter 4 and I haven't actually needed to fight anything. I can just put it on auto battle and it does it for me and I'm not struggling at all. My character's already over like a level 1,000 and the characters on chapter 4 are like level 120. So it's just like, why? I haven't grinded out to get this heavy handed, but the game's just doing it for me. So hopefully the new replayability features and stuff like that will sort of increase the difficulty and make it better. But I am excited of the fact that Disgaea 7 isn't sort of like demoned underworld, netherworld. We are sort of like going on a little Ease 8 sort of holiday island. We're going to Japanese culture and it's more bright and somewhere else.
So, though yeah. It is still the Himenoto Netherworld Cluster. So there is still elements of the netherworld, yes.
But yeah. But it's a more bright and friendly netherworld. So yeah, I am super excited.
Yeah, I'm sure you'll be picking this up on either Switch or PS4 when it comes out next year. They usually put these out in English pretty quick after they come out in Japan. So it doesn't usually take them that long. So we will see. Maybe by then you'll have a PS5 too.
I doubt it.
Yeah, me too. Sony Interactive Entertainment has announced the DualSense Edge wireless controller for PS5. A release date will be revealed in the coming months. The DualSense Edge wireless controller for PlayStation 5 is the first ever high-performance, ultra-customizable controller developed by Sony. Designed to give you an edge in gameplay by allowing you to create custom controls, the DualSense Edge wireless controller invites you to craft your own unique gaming experience tailored to your playstyle. This is finally their version of the Elite controller that Microsoft has.
Yeah. Have you ever tried an Elite controller?
Nope. The only Elite controller I've ever used was the one that PowerA put out for PC and Xbox.
Okay.
And it was because they sent it to me, right? Like I didn't actually go buy it, but I did try that controller out and I didn't hate it, but I don't really feel the need for a pro controller either. Like, I do just fine with a regular controller.
Yeah, I mean, if the console allows you to remap the buttons inside the console
itself. It does, yeah.
And what's the need paying like 150 quid for a console thing where you take the X button out yourself and put it where triangle is just so it doesn't do the...
Because you know this controller is going to be fucking expensive.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think the Xbox One is like 150 quid over here.
Yeah, it's like almost $200 here. It's stupid. Yeah,
I imagine the PS5 one will match that easily.
It's absurd. I probably won't pick this up, but hey, I'm sure people will.
Yeah. Team 17 and developers SMG Studios and DevM Games have announced moving out to for PC, PS5, Xbox Series, PS4, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch. It will release sometime in 2023. Moving out 2 will take players back to the breakneck and breakback and breakknee world of smooth moves, furniture, arrangement, and relocation technicians, aka farts. as they pack furniture, technology, and everything, including the kitchen sink, across increasingly bizarre locales with increasingly deadly challenges.
You flipped out when we saw this during the opening night live presentation.
Oh man, I love me some movie night.
You like being a big old fart.
Seth wants to be a fart. Yes he does. Sign me the fart out.
Game looks fun. It looks like a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely.
It's got some online co-op capabilities that I don't think the first one had, because I do know that they talked about that in their press release. So this one should be pretty enjoyable. If you like Overcooked, you'd probably like Moving Out, right? Same concept.
So did Overcooked 2, does that have online capabilities?
I think so. Gosh. But I don't remember for sure.
Because it's along the same sort of lines of being that like physics-based, like co-op infuriation sort of game, where like it's all fun and games until people aren't doing what they're supposed to be doing, and then you get really mad at them. So I know a toxic like Call of Duty and stuff can get online, but I think playing Moving Out and Overcooked 2 online... probably get really, really heated.
I bet it could. Yeah, it definitely could.
I'm all for it.
Quantic Dream and developer Parallel Studio have announced a narrative-driven adventure game, Under the Waves, for PC, PS5, Xbox Series, PS4, and Xbox One. It will release sometime in 2023. Under the Waves is a narrative-driven adventure game about the engulfing power of grief. Set in the depths of the North Sea in a techno-futuristic 1970s, professional diver Stan is struggling to overcome a life-changing loss and embrace a new future. The isolation of the deep sea is a fitting manifestation of his state of mind, and as Stan retreads further into his self-imposed solitude, he starts to experience strange events far beneath the waves. He will eventually have to make a difficult choice: stay lost in the depths forever, or break free to the surface and to the rest of his life. A love letter to the oceans, Under the Waves invites you to dive into a gorgeous underwater world brought to life in a poetic blend of cinematic visuals and poignant storytelling. Live a gripping story through Stan's eyes and guide him through an unforeseen series of events that will bring him deeper and deeper into the abyss, the reflection of his own psyche. And you know what, Sev? I am all for this. I love me some games that deal with grief and deal with mental health issues and that tell a story. Like, this is ultimately just a metaphor for what it's like to get lost in your own mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
And breaking free of that. That's exactly what this is. And I want to play the fuck out of this game.
Yeah, like I'm super intrigued by the story that it's trying to tell. I've said many times, like, I don't like games underwater because they scare the fuck out of me. But I'm very intrigued in this, and it's being published by Quantic Dream, being developed by Parallel Studios. Probably will give this a go.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a game that I have to play just based on the elements that they're dealing with alone. I think this could be something special, but we'll see what it ends up being.
Sony Interactive Entertainment is increasing the price of the PS5 in select markets, including Europe, the UK, Japan, China, Australia, Mexico, and Canada. And
this is probably why you're not going to get a PS5 anytime soon.
Nope.
Isn't it? It's increasing like what, 50? Is it 50 quid over there for you?
50 quid. So yeah, from 599, 499 to whatever. Yeah.
And some markets like Japan, it's going like up 5,000 yen or something like that in Japan. Like the only market that it's not increasing in is the US. It's staying the same over here. But like every other market that the PS5 is in, it is increasing in price due to the pandemic economic, I think is what they are attributing this to. Microsoft has since come out and stated that they are not increasing the price anywhere for the Xbox Series which means that they are just going to continue getting a bigger and bigger foothold over the PS5 in this generation.
Yeah, it's a really, really smart move of Xbox to do that. It's kind of like the PlayStation, here's how you share games sort of thing. Oh, it's not as impactful, but Xbox coming out and saying, yeah, we're not increasing the price, just makes Xbox more enticing.
Price is everything, dude. People look at that shit. So I'm a little shocked that Sony was willing to put that statement out and say, we're going to have to increase the cost. And we'll see what happens. I have a feeling their sales are going to suffer because of that.
Yeah, they should have at the loss.
Yep, should have. All-In Games and developer Iron Bird Creations have announced Phantom Hellcat, a Nier-inspired hack-and-slash action-adventure game for PC, PS5, Xbox Series, PS4, and Xbox One. You tell me Nier, I'm going to be there. A release date was not yet revealed. Phantom Hellcat is a dynamic action-adventure game with showy combos in a theatrical setting. When demons kidnap Jolene's mother, the teenager must take the stage and save her. But in the world of plays and props, things are not always what they appear to be. A mysterious theater holds a sinister secret. Demons imprisoned inside, guarded by a lonely overseer. When one of the seals loses its power, evil forces abduct their guardian, I don't know why I said that weird, to another dimension. All that's left behind is her rebellious daughter, Jolene. Though her mother's craft is a tough act to follow, Jolene must master it in no time. She must use magic masks to navigate through different deadly plays to upstage a mysterious trickster and save her family. Jump into dynamic hack and slash combat in vibrant but treacherous fantasy worlds interwoven with a theatrical setting. Slide, dash, and push forward to reach a grand finale. This trailer makes this game look super fucking dope, dude.
Yeah, was it opening live or was this Future Game Show?
I think this was Future Game Show.
Okay.
But I could be wrong. I was drunk during opening night live.
Mm-hmm. I fell asleep through to Future Game Show, so we're 2 for 2 on coverage there. Right. We both saw one show each.
Pretty much.
Yeah, this does look dope. This looks really, really cool.
It looks real cool. This next one I know was at opening night live that you're about to read.
It was. Good Shepherd Entertainment and developer Terravision Games have announced a 3v7 asymmetrical online multiplayer game, Killer Clowns from Outer Space, the game, for PC, PS5, Xbox Series, PS4, and Xbox One. It will launch early in 2023 as a live service title with multiple updates planned for post-launch. Killer Clowns from Outer Space, the game, is an asymmetrical multiplayer horror based on the iconic 80s film. In the battle between Killer Clowns and the citizens of Crescent Cove, team up and use your wits to harvest humans or save them from the alien invasion.
Now, I do like me some Killer Clowns from Outer Space. I think that is a cult classic from the 80s. I think that is a dope movie. I also love that we are getting a 3v7 type of game. This is like Dead by Daylight, right? Where it's 1v4. Mm-hmm. Or Friday the 13th, where it's 1v however many. There are however many camp counselors are in that game against Jason. Or the upcoming Texas Chainsaw Massacre game where it's Leatherface versus people trying to survive, right? I like this style of game. And I like that you have a game where it's 3 killers and 7 players trying to escape. This could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, the increase in numbers is what makes it different and makes it set apart from
correct.
You said the 1v4s that we're getting most of the time. So yeah, 3v7 is just a little over 2 survivors per 1 clown.
Right.
So yeah.
This could be cool, man. Yeah. I will likely be checking this out. I'm sure it'll enter an open beta at some point. I will probably play. I usually play these types of games on PC with mouse and keyboard, so I will likely probably pick this up when it comes out and give it a go. I love this style of game, man. Prop Night was fun too, where it was like 1v4. I just like that style of game. I do. I like that style of game. Our last bit of news for the lightning round, Jeff Keighley has announced that the Game Awards 2022 will be held on December 8th at the Microsoft Theater in Los Angeles, California. I don't know why I put a exclamation point after that. I guess I was excited when I wrote that. The 2022 show will introduce the Best Adaptation category, which recognizes creative works that authentically adapt video game IPs to other popular media, such as movies, streaming shows, podcasts, novels, and comic books, which is a cool idea for a category. The show will also once again feature a preview of upcoming games with new game announcements and world premieres, as well as musical performances, including the return of the Game Awards Orchestra, thank God, conducted by Lauren Bulf. I'm excited.
Yeah, so what that basically means to me is in 2 years' time, Best Adaptation is going to go to Hideo Kojima for his Death Stranding podcast.
Probably. Yeah. December 8th is a Thursday. We know the Game Awards is always in the evening. I will for sure react to this live over on youtube.com/RPG.
Shot for every world premiere, yeah?
do I do it again? I don't know.
It'll be like, what, 3 months' time. You'll forget how bad it was the previous time.
Yeah, probably. Maybe I'll do like a half shot. I did full mouth shots this last time. Drank an entire half bottle of vodka. And by the time the show ended, I couldn't even remember what I was watching. Like, I had to go back and watch the last like 30 minutes of Opening Night Live because I couldn't remember it.
Fantastic.
We do have some release dates, and by some I mean a fuck ton of release dates to confirm this week for the release date roundup. Return to Monkey Island releases on September 19th. 9 Years of Shadows releases on October 10th. The Last Orokru releases on October 13th. The Last Worker releases on October 19th. New Tales from the Borderlands releases on October 21st. Gotham Knights has been bumped up to release on October 21st instead of October 25th. Mountain Blade 2 Bannerlord releases on October 25th. Doraemon Story of Seasons Friends of the Great Kingdom releases on November 2nd. Ghost Song releases on November 3rd. Sonic Frontiers releases on November 8th. Pentiment releases on November 15th. The Dark Pictures Anthology The Devil in Me releases on November 18th. Gungrave Gore releases on November 22nd. Dead Island 2 did get confirmed for February 3rd, 2023 at the end of Opening Night Live. Destiny 2 Lightfall releases on February 28th, 2023. And the PlayStation VR 2 is set to release in early 2023. A lot of release dates and a lot of things I'm excited about in there. Glad we're finally getting some confirmation on shit.
Yeah, to be honest, I thought Mountain Blade 2 Bannerlord, I thought that's been out like twice already. Really don't understand why Gotham Knights got moved ahead 4 days. Maybe it didn't want to go against Mountain Blade Bannerlord.
Yeah, you would think that probably is not the case.
Yeah. And then also, I don't know why the Dark Pictures Anthology, The Devil and Me, it got nominated for like 3 awards at Opening Night Live. I think it was like nominated for Most Anticipated Game on every platform.
Same reason AEW Fight Forever got nominated for like the most looked forward to sports game or some shit.
Yeah, you got best sports game at Gamescom. Yeah
crazy.
Dope.
Devil and Me should be releasing before Halloween. That's just my opinion though.
November 18th. Yeah,
November 18th. Yeah, they missed the boat on that one.
Wow.
Do got a couple of delays as well. Wanted Dead has been delayed to February 14th, 2023. Flashback 2 has been delayed to sometime in 2023, as well as Park Beyond has also been delayed to sometime next year. Park Beyond is looking incredible.
Yeah, it does look really fun.
Yeah, that's that like wacky, crazy Roller Coaster Tycoon inspired game where you can just, you know, all the rides are insane. I love shit like that. I will play Park Beyond. That looks like a game I would enjoy. But that is finally the end of the Sean Waltman Lightning Round this week.
This is Kyle, and one day you can be too. Every Friday, I host what is soon to be your favorite podcast, The Media Files. Me and one of my best friends talk about pop culture happenings so that you don't look like an uncultured swine during those boring water cooler conversations. Laughs are shared, tears are cried, and sometimes we have really interesting special guests that you might be familiar with. Download The Media Files wherever you download podcasts, and remember, be kind, be honest, and we'll see you later.
And Sev, you know what that music means. It is time for the new release roulette. And we have a full slate of games, 6 to go over. Several of these I am looking forward to this week, and several also on Xbox Game Pass. So let's run down this list. Game number 1, coming on Tuesday to PC, PS5, PS4, Xbox Series, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch, and it will be playable via Xbox Game Pass. It is Tinykin. Milo arrives on Earth to find that he's way too small, everybody's gone, and a day hasn't passed since 1991. Team up with the mysterious Tinykin and use their unique powers to create ladders, bridges, explosions, and a lot more. Find a way home through a sprawling, ant-sized metropolis and unravel Earth's biggest mystery. This is Pikmin 4. I think this looks kind of fun. I will download and play this now that it's on Game Pass. I'm excited to play Dan the game.
Is Kyle reviewing this one?
I don't know. I know he's going to play it.
He made a big fuss on Thunderdome, if I remember rightly, when we took it off because he was super hyped for it. I think he needs to put his Game Pass where his mouth is and review this one for it.
We should force him to review it. Kyle has to review Tinykin. He's not working on anything else right now.
Ouch.
I will play it, though. I will play Tinykin, and now that it's on Game Pass. Yesterday, when I jumped into Midnight Fight Express, I'm pretty sure I already tagged this to pre-install, so I will play it when it comes out.
Cool.
Game number two, coming on Tuesday to PC, PS5, PS4, Xbox Series, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch. It is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Cowabunga Collection. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the Cowabunga Collection, assembles 13 classic TMNT games by Konami in one incredible package. This collection provides the unique opportunity for gamers to experience these immensely popular and very influential games with a fantastic set of new quality of life features, including added online play for certain games and local couch co-op, save anytime and rewind, 11 Japanese regional version releases, button mapping, unique development art and sketches, and historic TMNT media content. And the 17 games included are the arcade version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the arcade version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time, the NES version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the NES version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, the arcade game, the NES version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3, the Manhattan Project, the NES version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Tournament Fighters, the Super Nintendo version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 4, Turtles in Time, the Super Nintendo version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Tournament Fighters, the Sega Genesis version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles The Hyperstone Heist, the Sega Genesis version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles The Tournament Fighters, the Game Boy version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Fall of the Foot Clan, the Game Boy version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 Back from the Sewers, and the Game Boy version of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 3 Radical Rescue. I like most of these games. I am going to buy this collection.
Yeah, I'm going to pick it up as well. Do you know if there's much difference between Tournament Fighters on the NES and Tournament Fighters on the Super NES? And
I would imagine there is some differences.
On the Sega Genesis.
I would imagine there's some differences, but I don't know what they would be. Couldn't tell you.
I also don't, again, the button mapping, body button mapping for Game Boy games. It's just like A, B, up, down,
it's
left.
It's A, B, up, down, left, right. Yeah, it's just two buttons.
I'm gonna map them to start and the, what's the big pad in the middle? The touch screen.
The touch screen. Yeah. I'm gonna map it all to touch controls because I'll probably play it on the Switch.
I'm gonna map move forward to the home button on the PlayStation controller. So,
perfect. Yeah. Just to make it hard for you to play. Yeah, I probably will pick this up on the Switch. Because I probably want to play these handheld, just on the go.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Switch is the right choice of platform for this one, but we'll see. Game number three, coming on Tuesday to PC and Xbox Series, and it is playable via Xbox Game Pass. I am very much looking forward to this game, Immortality. Marissa Marcel was a film star. She made 3 movies, but none of the movies were ever released. And Marissa Marcel disappeared. An interactive trilogy from Sam Barlow, creator of Her Story and Telling Lies. I fucking love Sam Barlow. I love his format. I love his storytelling. I love his gameplay, like being able to go through actual like movies and clicking on something to take you to another movie to try to find clues and try to piece together this mystery. I like these style of games. I am really looking forward to Immortality. I have it on my Fantasy Critic this year.
Yeah, it should score pretty high. We ranked it in our draft, but the fans are way too noisy, and I think I went with like a high 80, maybe 86 or 88. I expect this to do really well.
Yeah, I think this game is going to do well. At least I hope it does. I really hope it does. I'll play it. Game number four, coming on Friday to PC, PS4, and Nintendo Switch. It is Made in Abyss, Binary Star, Falling into Darkness. Experience the awesome power of the Curse of the Abyss, as well as the astonishing legendary entities known as primeval creatures. Prepare to glimpse the world of Riko and her friends in this action RPG inspired by the anime of the same name, with an all-new story supervised by Akihito Tsukushi. This one is one that I'm intrigued by. I'm hoping I get a review key for it, because I do want to play it. I don't know that I would actually buy this game if I had to pick it up right away, because it looks a lot like a game where you are traversing back and forth into the same cave. Like you're basically cave diving, right?
Mm-hmm.
And going in there, doing some stuff, coming back out, and then rinsing and repeating. I do like the action RPG elements. I think this game could be fun, but I'm not sure yet. I do have it on my radar, though. I'm keeping an eye on it.
Yeah, I think I had like number 14 or 15 on the Thunderdome list. I was quite high on it after the initial trailer, but I have since cooled off. I think, I'm just going to wait for reviews to see if it's worth picking up.
Correct. That's kind of where I'm sitting at, too, if I don't get a review key. So we'll see what happens. Game number five, coming on Friday to PS5, PS4, Xbox Series, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch. It is LEGO Brawls. Dream up the ultimate minifigure brawlers and bash your way through all your favorite LEGO themes in the first team action brawler set in the LEGO universe. Design your ultimate LEGO minifigure hero with unique style, strategy, and personality. build the ultimate brawler and level them up with unlockable content, then go play with friends at home or around the world and see how you stack up against the competition. Another brawler this week, Sev. Are you interested in LEGO Brawls?
No. Is it free to play? No.
It is not free to play, to my understanding.
Yikes. I think this one's just going to get lost in the shuffle, if I'm honest. Like, Multiverse is quite high at the moment.
Sure is. Like, 10 million people fucking playing that game or something like that?
Right, and it's free to play. It really stands a chance releasing. Do you know who's developing this?
I don't, but I can find out. LEGO Brawls. It is developed by Red Games.
Okay, I'm unaware of their work.
Yeah, I don't know who they are either. I'm looking them up now to see what else they've done. Red Games is pimping LEGO Brawls on their homepage, because why wouldn't they? Probably the biggest game they've done. They also did Crayola Create and Play, which is like a coloring book game, looks like for kids, on the arcade store, Apple Arcade. Transformers Tactical Arena, also on Apple Arcade. And Solitaire Stories, also on Apple Arcade. Super Mega Mini Party, which looks kind of dumb.
Tom's birthday.
Also on Apple Arcade. Yeah, it looks like just a small team. Small team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Who knows if this game will actually be good. Maybe it'll be their breakout game. Could be.
Okay. Nice pun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. See what I did there? I didn't even realize.
Did you see what you did there?
Nope.
Nope.
Game number 6 coming on Friday to PC and PS5, The Last of Us Part 1. Experience the emotional storytelling and unforgettable characters in The Last of Us, winner of over 200 Game of the Year awards. In a ravaged civilization where infected and hardened survivors run rampant, Joel, a weary protagonist, is hired to smuggle 14-year-old Ellie out of a military quarantine zone. However, what starts as a small job soon transforms into a brutal cross-country journey. This package includes the complete Last of Us single-player story and celebrated prequel chapter Left Behind, which explores the events that changed the lives of Ellie and her best friend Riley forever. I make no qualms that I love The Last of Us Part 1 and Part 2. I have played through the original Last of Us on PS3 when it released in 2013. I played through the remastered version when it came out on the PS4. And I will play through this version on the PS5. I will get it through Gamefly, though. I am not buying it a third time. I will play the Gamefly version when it ships to me. I have it set as my game lock, so as long as I send back right now I have Saints Row, Pac-Man, which I haven't received yet, Pac-Man repack, and Digimon Survive. I likely am just going to end up sending back Saints Row, because I have a feeling I can just bum rush that story in that game, not really focus on anything else, because I don't care about anything else in that game. I probably can finish Saints Row between tonight, tomorrow, and Tuesday, get this back in time to have this ship by Friday.
Yeah, how long to beat has it? 12 hours, so it's not a massive ask to get through Saints Row, to be honest.
Yeah, so that's probably my plan. I likely will do that, and I will play The Last of Us when it arrives from Gamefly, go through that again, you know. Check out the redone graphics, even though they don't look that redone. It does look better in some areas. I'll just experience or appreciate playing through the story again, because I fucking love this story. It's such a good one. It's a good one. Scoring highest on OpenCritic, scoring the lowest this week. I think it is fairly easy to tell this week. I am going with definitely The Last of Us Part 1 as scoring the highest. I think that will still set the bar on fire in terms of review scores, because when the original and the remastered version came out, they reviewed very highly. I expect this to do the same. Scoring the lowest, I'm going with Made in Abyss, Binary Star, Falling into Darkness.
Okay, I thought you were going to go the same as me. I'm going, obviously, scoring the highest is The Last of Us Part 1. Look at us, we've got 200 Game Awards. Yeah, you were the best game of some previous generation, pretty much.
I'm hoping it comes in at like a 94 or 95, because I have it on Fantasy Critic. It'll just set me up for success, and I've only had 2 games released so far, and I'm still not that far behind Viz.
Yeah, I hope you kick his ass, to be fair.
I will, don't worry.
Good, good. I fully expect this to hit mid to low 90s to be nice, going lowest, I am taking LEGO Brawls.
I thought about LEGO Brawls as well. I mean, it's going to be either that or Made in Abyss scoring the lowest. Now, I do think Immortality, which I also have on Fantasy Critic, is going to score extremely well.
Mm-hmm.
There was, because the game got delayed like right before it was supposed to come out, there was a magazine that reviewed the game, Edge Magazine, over there in the UK. You might be familiar with them. They are kind of tough on games, right? Like, they don't just throw out high reviews, and they gave Immortality a 10 out of 10.
Yikes.
So I do think immortality might come in the low 90s as well, which means after this week, I might already be kicking Viz's ass.
You've got immortality as well, apparently.
I do.
Fucking love it.
I have some heavy hitters for the rest of this year, man. Like, I'm set up for success. I have Modern Warfare 2, which should score well. I have Pokemon Scarlet and Violet, which should score well. I have Dragonflight, which should score well. The last good Warcraft expansion came in at like an 89 or a 90. There's potential for this one to come in even higher. I have some big games for the rest of this year that could get me some solid points. Because once it crosses 90, the points get doubled or something like that. So that's why Elden Ring at a 95 got me like a 31. Yeah, so it's fucking crazy. Whereas Viz is rolling on like Valkyrie Elysium and Evil West.
For me, double A's.
And he has Crisis Core Final Fantasy VII Reunion, which is not even going to come out this year. I don't know why he picked that up.
I don't know.
I think he's banking on the this winter, but I'm telling you right now, that game is not coming out before March of next year. That game will be, and that's still technically winter. That is going to be a late February, early March 2023 game. I would love to be wrong, though. I'd love to play it by the end of the year, but I don't think we will. My pick of the week this week is Immortality.
Yeah, do you know what? Let's give it to Immortality.
Ooh, are you going to play it because it's on Game Pass?
I am. Do you know what? I am going to give it a go. I never tried Her Story or what you say the other one was called.
Telling Lies. I believe those are both playable on Game Pass 2 right now. You should check them out.
Okay. Games like this tend to make me feel really dumb, but yeah, I'll definitely give it a go.
Yeah, give it a go. Check it out. That's your new release roulette for this week. And Sev, we have a ton of other Gamescom stuff to talk about here. We've got some wrap-up and thoughts on some of the things that really stuck out to us most during the last week of content. So why don't you kick us off? What's something that really stuck out to you from Gamescom?
Well, we've just done a 2-hour podcast on AEW, but screw it, I'm going to bring it up again. AEW's Fight Forever stuck out to me from Gamescom this week.
It looked pretty good. It looked better than what we saw initially.
Yeah, the original trailer didn't do it much justice, but from what we saw at Gamescom, there was a bunch of stuff showing up, a bunch of stuff confirmed about it. But yeah, it does look very much like a callback to No Mercy, which they were aiming for, right down to like the little momentum bar at the bottom, sort of like pulsating. Yeah, it all look pretty good. Like, wrestlers have got like 5 finishers and 5 signatures each.
Yeah,
depending on like where they are in the ring. There's like seated finishers. I'm guessing there'll be like top rope finishers, apron finishers, outside finishers, all that sort of stuff. They confirm like 40 weapons. They confirm that like there's no limit to how many weapons can be in the ring.
I'm just quite interested
to see how many chairs I can throw in the ring. I have a big pile stacked up.
Be like Mox just chucking chairs in the ring.
Yeah, very much like Mox chucking chairs in the ring. Yeah, like the only real like down point we got from this was like you can't share your custom wrestlers. There'll be none of that in this. And then also like the entrances are very much like quick entrances.
Whoa. So there's no like downloadable creator wrestlers?
No.
Oh. So man, they're really going back. So what we're going to see the return of instead is creator wrestler formulas. Correct.
Yeah.
We're going to see the return of formulas from the N64 era. I don't hate that.
Set red to 12. Set blue. Yeah. 15 in the hair. Yeah. It's cool.
I don't hate that. Okay. I am excited to play this game though.
Yeah, but then like quick entrances, the entrances like we saw in the gameplay, it was like Adam Cole's was literally like, it's Adam Cole. And then he was stood on the apron and he went boom. And then he caught it and he went, Adam Cole, baby. And it was done in the space of like 8-12 seconds.
I'm assuming the entrances aren't fully implemented yet. At least I'm hoping so.
But... No, that's what they are. The entrances aren't going to be full entrances. They're literally going to be like, here's the guy, a little bit of his music, and then straight into the match.
Well, again, that's No Mercy, right?
Yeah.
That's how No Mercy was, too. And that's how WrestleMania 2000 was as well. Man, I didn't even realize that. Damn. Okay, well, I'm still excited for it.
They had like one of the developers, and then they had Colt Cabana and Evil Uno like sat on one of the stages, or sat in like a little treehouse thing, and they talked to him and they asked him a bunch of questions, and he like, I think quite a bit of stuff he like let slip on, or they just sort of managed to get out of him. But yeah, we did get a fair amount of information, and that was probably my biggest highlight from this showcase.
We also had some wrestling exhibition matches from AEW there as well during Gamescom. We had Evil Uno take on Christopher Daniels, and Colt Cabana took on Angelico.
Nice.
Yeah. Couldn't tell you who won because I didn't really watch it, but I do know those matches happened. So One game that stuck out to me that I want to talk about is one. I have six that I pulled that theoretically probably could have been included in the lightning round, because these are all, except for one, like brand new announcements as well. But one of these is Dune Awakening, the new open world survival MMO that's going to be coming out for PC, PS5, and Xbox Series. I really now, granted, this reveal trailer we saw didn't show much, right? It was like a guy lead character standing in like this deserty dune looking area and something like coming up from the sands. Now, I have not seen Dune the movie either, so I don't know what that like big giant sandworm thing is that came out of the ground. But I do like this open world survival based MMO. Sean and I really got into Conan Exiles there for a bit. And he and I also have been playing a little bit of, is it called like 7 Days to Die or something like that?
Okay, I thought you were going to say Rust, and you haven't been playing Rust, have you?
No, I've not been playing Rust, though no, I think Sean does want to play some Rust. But I am intrigued by this Dune Awakening MMO, and if done correctly, like it says you'll be able to build shelters against sandstorms, maintain your still suit, master the old ways to walk, even the deepest deserts. You'll be able to explore the ever-changing face of Arrakis, you know, walking along long-forgotten ruins, biological testing stations, scavenge the wreckage of fallen spaceships. You'll be able to hunt for spice blooms and deploy your harvester. You'll be able to make plans within the plans. So it says, make a name for yourself among the inhabitants of Arrakis, wield intrigue and force to influence the Landsraad and impact the world. Build your own faction through spice harvesting, trade, subterfuge, and open conflict. And there's just a lot that I think there could be to like about Dune Awakening for the type of stuff that I look for. Now, it's not a traditional MMO experience, but I think that playing with friends like Sean or something like that and trying to survive this hostile environment could be a lot of fucking fun. I'm very intrigued by this game.
Yeah, survival games and MMOs aren't kind of my bag, but I can see where the intrigue comes from with this.
Yeah, for sure. What's another one you got?
So another one I got that I'm pretty sure you rolled your eyes at when it came along, but I was laughing hysterically through the whole trailer, was Goat Simulator 3.
Oh my god, yeah. Goat Simulator 3 looks horrific.
It's just dumb for the sake of dumb, and it's dumb everywhere. The stupid goat with its Satan eyes and its tongue flapping out everywhere, and it licking and sticking to stuff, and it was in cannons and in cars. And I'm pretty sure we saw like rhinos and giraffes or something that you can control. Like, I haven't like been that. Back and watched the trailer since I first watched it.
I know, just like I even mentioned this, because this is not the announcement of Ghost Simulator 3. Like, that was announced, I think, during the Summer Game Fest. But Justin's youngest kid, who is 9 years old, is a massive fan of Goat Simulator 1 and 2, and I know he is dying to play Goat Simulator 3 when it comes out later this year. He'll be all over it, but me, I won't ever fucking touch it.
Oh man, it's good for some dumb fun. Saints Row? You're right. Yeah. you are right. We did get it at Summer Games Fest, and this was the it was the fake out trailer that was meant to be the Dead Island 2 trailer.
Yes,
and it turned into the Goat Simulator, but then we did get the Dead Island 2 trailer at the end of Opening Night Live, so it's nice that they their long term storytelling.
Tony Khan's booking Opening Night Live.
Yeah, so some things didn't make much sense, but there were other things that were like absolutely perfect, exactly where they needed to be. There was even some botches. What was the game that Jeff Keighley called out? It was did anyone play like Home Planet or something? And the whole none of the crowd like.
Oh yeah, nobody cheered. Nobody cheered. Yeah.
Who's looking forward to Home Space 3?
Nobody.
I think they gave him a pity clap after the trailer, but still no one's fucking it. But yeah, Go Simulator 3 looks wacky.
All right. Next up on my list is Stranded: Alien Dawn, which is coming out for PC. It is another survival-based simulation game, but it's set on this unique planet. It says here that you will place the fate of a small marooned group in your hands, forge your story through compelling and immersive strategic gameplay as you make vital decisions to protect your survivors from starvation, disease, extreme weather, and more. From basic camps to fortified bases, create a stronghold to defend the survivors from attacks by alien creatures that roam an expansive and deadly alien world. This game looks real fucking cool, dude. I like survival-based games that are set in open worlds. I don't just like survival-based games. Like, I don't like Rust. I don't like Raft. I don't like games like that. But I like games that take it into a little bit more of a deeper gameplay mechanic, if that makes sense. And I feel like that's what, like, Dune and now Stranded: Alien Dawn are both doing. And this game does look gorgeous, right? This game looked super gorgeous from the trailer that was shown off. I like the crafting and the building mechanics. It reminds me a lot of like a Stardew Valley or a SimCity, where you are building up these civilizations, or even Civilization to an extent, right? Like, you're building up this type shit and trying to fortify it, but also keep them alive by planting crops with all the fauna and local vegetation that exists on this planet. This one could be really, really cool. And it says it has a modular base building mechanic as well, where you can pretty much do what you want, how you want to do it. And I like that kind of stuff. That reminds me a lot of like the way Fallout 4 handled their base building.
What did you say this game is called, sorry?
Stranded: Alien Dawn. Stranded: Alien Dawn. Like, you crash land on this planet, right? And then you have to survive as these survivors on this hostile environment. It looks kind of dope. Are you checking out the trailer? Did you forget about this one?
Yes. This was very out of my wheelhouse until it was survival MMO.
Well, it's not an MMO.
It's not an MMO.
It's just a survival simulation game. So it's got elements of survival. It's got elements of sim. So it's not an MMO, though. Okay, but it is only on PC.
Yes. Reminded me very much of a very good sci-fi series that I won't say the name of, because if I say the name of it, it'll spoil the ending. This definitely, I fell in love with this for the first 30 seconds and kind of drifted off it.
And it's coming out in early access in October, so we won't have to wait too long to check it out, which is kind of cool.
Nice.
All right, what else you got?
So we're going with Where the Winds Meet.
Where the Winds Meet. I have to look this one up because I don't remember this one.
But this is the very, very pretty Chinese or Japanese. Very much looks like
Ghost of Tsushima. Remember.
It's Ghost of Tsushima meets the Dark Souls in it, essentially, or Bloodborne or Sekiro.
Good choice, man. This is high on my list as well. Yeah, this looks fucking incredible.
I think at the moment, I think it is a Chinese developer making it. Everstone Studios. But I think it's only been announced for PC. But yeah, it is like super, looks like super high polish. You see like this samurai guy, he's sort of like walking through the village, and then he like
walks on water even.
He does the Jesus thing, and he's definitely worthy. He throws his shuriken, and then he sort of like runs away, and he sort of like bounces Assassin's Creed, like very, very elegantly bounces up onto the rooftop, and then some other lady, like, she holds him on the rooftop, and then these other mysterious figures turn up, and then, and then it sort of like montages into like running around and running on water, up a boat and doing big stuff, and then we see him fight a bear, so have a standoff with a bear in the woods, and then it sort of flips, and there's like these big monsters in the woods, and then he's like, was he stood in some like shallow water thing, and then these huge stone swords sort of fall in, and like these big, so it goes from like, oh, this is very Ghost of Tsushima-y to like, nah, it's very Dark Souls as well. This does look really, really cool.
We've got a lot of Chinese developed games that look incredible being announced and revealed as of late, right? With like Honor of Kings World and
Wukong.
Whatever that one's called, right? Like fucking Wo Long Fallen Dynasty, I think is actually the name of it. And then there's Black Myth Wukong. And then there's Code to Jinyong. I have all these on my radar because I keep an internal spreadsheet through Google on Google spreadsheets, and I have all these listed on like, and I have this one on there, Where the Wind Meets. Yeah, I have it on there. I just totally forgot about it. But there's so many of these games that are coming out that are, you know, inspired by Chinese mythology and lore, and like, this is just, it's fucking dope, dude. Real cool.
Yeah, so I think it might be one of them like untapped areas. We got a lot of zombies, we've had a lot of survival, we've had a lot of 4v1s and stuff, so maybe like the Chinese Japanese sort of Edo period or medieval period sort of time, that's the next big thing.
And shit, I just played and reviewed Sword and Fairy Together Forever, right? Which is based on Chinese mythology as well. Like, there's just so much of it out there right now. And if all of these can grip me as much as that game did, I am so in. Good choice, man. Good choice, because I forgot about that one. Good fucking choice. Real good choice. Next up for me is the team behind the Technomancer. They announced a new fantasy action RPG called Atlas Fallen for PC, PS5, and Xbox Series. Deck 13 is developing this game. Focus Entertainment publishing it. Set to launch next year. This game, it could be good, man. Like, I'm always wanting this studio to have a breakout hit, right? Like, they keep trying to do these different takes on RPGs, like these Western-based RPGs. That's exactly what this looks like. This world looks super fucking cool. Starts out with like almost like a Knights of the Templar-esque look, right? And there's a church with some stained glass windows, and you are looking like a medieval setting to an extent, but it's also deserty, and then some mythological beasts, and then there's a girl that's riding like a fucking weapon down a hill. Looks like it could be pretty crazy. I am very intrigued, and I want to see more, because the initial trailer we saw during opening night live definitely piqued my interest.
Yeah, is Deck 13, is it the same? Are they the Greedfall developers as well?
I think they might be, actually. Deck 13, let's check them out real quick, which I did kind of like Greedfall.
I think I'd get like Deck 13 Spiders from Focus Home Interactive sort of like muddled up. I believe they're all like European studios.
No, so they did not do Greedfall. They actually did not do the Technomancer either. I was wrong. They just did the Surge and the Surge 2.
Okay.
And then the original Lords of the Fallen.
Okay, so we did get a Lords of the Fallen, didn't we?
We did, which I don't have on my list. I don't know if you have it on your list.
I do not know.
There was the reintroduction of Lords of the Fallen 2, which was already announced, but being brought back, right? Like, Lords of the Fallen 2 was previously announced, and now it's just called The Lords of the Fallen or whatever. But yeah, I'm intrigued by that too. But this Atlas Fallen, I want to see more. It could be good.
Definitely, definitely. So the next game I brought along, and I won't stay long on this because the trailer was pretty short and didn't really show much. It was more of like a mood piece. But that's got to be UAiden Chronicles 100 Heroes.
Dude, yes. We saw a new trailer for the traditional proper follow-up to Suikoden, right? Not the Rising that we got earlier this year that was like a prequel to just set up the story for 100 Heroes, which I don't think you and I, neither one of us have finished that yet. I think we forgot about the thing. We forgot it exists. But I do want to get back and finish that at some point. But 100 Heroes looks gorgeous.
Yeah, it's exactly what we needed. Sort of like 16-bit, pretty sprites, pretty world, some nice little music and stuff. It was just nice to have the reiteration that, yeah, it's coming. It's coming next year. And look forward.
I'll be there. I'll be there when it hits.
Me too. Me too.
I will be there when it hits. Next up on my list is something that I am very fucking excited about, but one that we didn't see much on, and that is Wordsong. This is the new AAA open world RPG coming from former Bethesda, Obsidian, and BioWare developers that set up a new studio called Something Wicked Games, and it is an occult historical fantasy RPG set in a fictionalized Portugal in the Middle Ages. Players will be challenged to question both their reality and the choices they make as Wordsong is set to expand, question, and redefine aspects of what makes up the current RPG genre. The studio is led by CEO and founder Jeff Gardner, a 15-year veteran of Bethesda Softworks, where he worked on Skyrim, Fallout 3, Fallout 4, and Fallout 76, and co-founded by Charles Staples, who previously worked on The Outer Worlds and Fallout New Vegas. And again, they have a ton of other people from Bethesda, Obsidian, and BioWare on board at this new studio as well. This could be something insanely fucking good, dude. Years away, probably. Years away. I'm sure several years away, right? I'm talking 3 to 4 years away. But when this game comes out, this could be really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, the world kind of looked cool. Like, all we saw was sort of like medieval Portugal, up in flames sort of thing. But yeah, definitely set a nice little tone, but then that's all we got. It was just like, here's a tiny, tiny sort of sliver of our idea, and that was it. But yeah, color me intrigued. I'm definitely in on it.
Yep, I agree. I've got two more left. How many more do you have left?
Yeah, I only have two more left. And
oh, perfect. So we brought the same amount then. Perfect. All right, what do you got next?
So next one I'm going to go with is Miasma Chronicles, which is by the same team.
Your Asthma Chronicles. I remember this game.
Yeah, My Asthma Chronicles. Really weird name. But yeah, I wasn't super hyped on the first trailer that they dropped for it. And then when I realized it was the team behind Mutant Year Zero, and it was a game in the same sort of style, I was super on board with this. So this is a sort of like a dystopian future world, and you travel across it, and then whenever you come into combat, it essentially turns into like XCOM combat, like turn-based, grid-based combat. Yeah, the trailer we got was super polished. The world looks super detailed, and
it looked way better this time around than it did previously.
Yeah.
I will give them that. That XCOM style gameplay, right? Like the RTS style stuff. I do tend to struggle a bit when it comes to those types of games. I may check this out, though. It's looking pretty good.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one.
Yeah, it's looking pretty good. So we'll have to see how it goes. Next up for me is coming from Prime Matter and Madhead Games. It is the third-person action-adventure game, Scars Above. Do you remember this one?
Scars Above.
Yeah. Scars Above. Here's the about. A colossal and enigmatic alien structure appears in Earth's orbit and stuns the entire world. Humanity names it the Metahedron. The sentient contact assessment and response team, known as SCAR, consisting of scientists and engineers, is sent to investigate. Things don't go as planned, and the Metahedron hauls the team across space onto a mysterious extrasolar planet. Playing the role of Dr. Kate Ward, a SCAR member, who wakes up dazed, alone in a strange, hostile environment. Determined to survive, you set out to find your crew and unravel the mystery behind what's happened. So it is like a survival-based game to an extent. Reminds me a lot of Returnal in presentation and the way that it's set up. You are exploring this mysterious exoplanet, right? Trying not to get killed by the local creatures and inhabitants that are calling that planet home. And you are trying to research and figure out what the fuck actually happened. It says there's going to be thrilling boss fights. This could have some really fun gameplay, different weapons, different tech pieces to use, since you are a scientist, obviously, and this is a sci-fi experience, right? So I'm assuming there'll be all types of crazy gadgets and weapons to kind of utilize. And there is a crafting system as well, according to the press release. This game looks gorgeous, first of all. It looks real gorgeous, and I'm very intrigued by it. It's set to come out, there's no actual date revealed, so probably a couple years away still.
It says, I'm looking on Metacritic, says TBA 2023, but it might just be a placeholder.
I hope next year.
It would be nice. It just depends how long it's been cooking for, doesn't it?
Correct.
It looks beautiful. I am wary of Prime Matter stuff.
Yeah, I know.
You know what I mean? They either nail it in gameplay and lack in like polish, or they're very polished and they lack in gameplay. The resources don't usually stretch to do both things. But if they can pull this off, then yeah, there's no reason this can't be absolutely stunning.
All right. What do you got last? And then I'll follow up with my last one.
So my last one is a nice little fun one, and that's called Lou's Lagoon.
Lou's Lagoon. I don't remember that one either. Looking it up now.
So this one is very much like, kind of take it as like a Midsummer in Mara sort of vibe. It's sort of like I've said a couple of times on this podcast, coincidentally, a little island getaway sort of holiday.
Sounds like you just need an island getaway for yourself, Sev.
It does. Like, I don't like holidays, to be honest. I haven't been on holiday in like 15, 20 years. I don't go on holiday.
Lou's Lagoon. Here it is. Okay. Oh, kind of cutesy graphics. Oh, I remember this.
Yeah. I think the bit that won me over is that you get a seaplane, and seaplanes are really cool. It just gave me a little bit of nostalgia for it. Do you remember the carving tailspin?
Yeah.
So just a nice big seaplane, and you go to different islands in the sea, and you get to meet all the inhabitants. And I think you do, basically. It's essentially going to be like fetch quests and find quests and build stuff.
But you get to fish with a bear, and there's like some rabbits on an island.
Yeah, all cutesy, all fishing.
All cutesy stuff. All it's missing is cats for you.
Right.
Better be some cat island somewhere.
Yeah. But yeah, I like this one. It's definitely something that I'll keep my eye on, and I'll probably play whenever I feel like I need a holiday.
Sounds good. Well, your actual last game kind of goes hand in hand with the setup to my last game, which is we got a deep dive from Square Enix into Harvestella.
Okay, I missed this.
Which is an upcoming, like, slice slice of life simulation action RPG. Very much now that I've seen it in the vein of like Rune Factory, it just kind of looks like a graphically better, more advanced Rune Factory style of game, right? Where you're able to go out and do some dungeon diving and explore towns and set up a farm and do whatever the fuck you want, right? This game has pretty much everything involved, right? Different classes that you can explore for the RPG mechanics, a bartering system, crafting, cooking, like I said already, farming, characters to explore. I wouldn't be shocked if there was some type of romance or marriage system in this game as well, though I haven't quite seen if that's actually there yet. I wasn't super hyped on Harvestella. Like, I knew I was going to check it out, but I wasn't super hyped on it. And then I saw the deep dive that they released during Gamescom week, and I became like, holy shit, this is a game I'm probably going to need to pick up on day one. Okay. This game looks real fucking good.
That's fair. As I said, I haven't watched a deep dive into it, but
I don't think there is a watch. I think it was just actually like released on their blog with a bunch of like information and screenshots and stuff. But it was like during Gamescom week, and it came out around that time. So I know it was kind of, you know, supposed to coincide with that. But this looks real fucking good, man. It looks real strong.
Yeah, I think that there might be I will check this out, but there might be a fight for who wants to review this one, man. It looks that good.
Yeah, we'll have to see. It does look fun. I know I'm going to check it out for sure. Like I said, this is potentially a day one game for me, so we will see. But those are 12 games we brought that really stuck out to us from Gamescom 2022. Outside of the stuff that we talked about earlier during the Sean Waltman lightning round, Gamescom was pretty packed this past week. A lot of stuff to consume, a lot of stuff to go over. There's even several more games that we didn't cover that if you want to go check them out, like I said, go look up Opening Night Live, go look up the Future Game Showcase, go look up all the developer presentations that happened on YouTube and Twitch. A lot of games at Gamescom. This was a good Gamescom, I think.
It was, and I did say it during the private screening that I think Jeff had a much better showcase here than he did.
I agree with that.
Summer Games Fest. He managed to pull some actual surprises and some nice variety out here. So yeah,
I agree. Opening Night Live was immensely better than the Summer Game Fest. I agree with that. I do.
And that's not usually the way, is it? Like, Opening Night Live is usually the
pretty slow.
Yeah, pretty slow. We thought we were getting 2 hours, 30 games. Going to be a lot of developer talk, but no, it turned out to be a world premiere, which screwed you over.
Fucking fucked me.
Very nice for everyone else.
Yeah, just not me. All right, well, before we get on out of here, you know what that music means. It is time to jump into a little Kickstart My Heart, and unfortunately, we can't do the thing that I really wish we could do for Kickstart My Heart this week, which is Armed Fantasia to the End of the Wilderness. The double Kickstarter campaign for, you know, the follow-up to Wild Arms spiritual successor. We're getting Armed Fantasia to the End of the Wilderness and Penny Blood, both double Kickstarter campaign, but it doesn't launch until tomorrow, the 29th of August. So we will cover that game next week on Max Level. So I had to pull a different game for Kickstart My Heart this week, since we are recording this on Sunday. I know it's going to post on Tuesday when the campaign's technically already live, so what I'm saying may not make sense to you, but we are recording this early, so it's not live for us yet. So instead, we are doing Pixel Art Skyrim. Influenced by classic and modern games, the name of the game is World of Antera, an innovative open-world role-playing game. So let's check this out. Inspired by modern and classic games. What?
But if I say I've opened the page and I'm looking at the first screenshot on my I think I'm in love already.
Oh yeah, beautiful. Dude. This game looks fucking gorgeous. Mm. This game looks real gorgeous. Inspired by modern and classic games, World of Antera is a highly interactive, non-linear open-world RPG. The game features an endlessly explorable open world, deep progression systems, fast-paced combat, and rich lore, all wrapped in a satisfying and accessible interface. It's the type of game only an independent studio could make. So let's scroll down here a little bit. Coming to PC, GOG, Switch, PlayStation, and Xbox sometime in 2023. It says, key features and innovations. A diverse and living world. Explore a vast world with oceans, continents, regions, castles, and towns, mountains, caves, and dungeons. Antera is full of life, from little insects to hulking creatures. NPCs live out their lives following daily routines while also responding dynamically to events in the world as well as to the player. World of Vanterra is built to be explored freely and at your own pace. A deep and inspiring non-linear story. The story and quests follow non-linear divergent paths so you can go where you want and talk to whomever you'd like. Your story will unfold naturally based on the paths you choose to follow. Conversational dialogue. A unique way to converse with NPCs that allows players to have a more conversational experience with every character in the game. The team ditched the overly wordy linear dialogue experiences of modern games and designed a completely new retro-inspired system. Fast and fluid party-based combat. Leveraging the team's vast experience across many genres of gaming, including casual and social games, combat is designed to be fun no matter how many hours you put in, with streamlined UI and engaging feedback, and a satisfying and accessible user interface. It says their design skills really shine. They have designed an interface with the least amount of UI and words as possible. Instead of menus and lists, they leveraged true to the world items and intuitive icons to create a wonderful user experience, which is kind of cool looking. You can even see in the screenshots, right? It's not cluttered with a UI or anything. It's just open, which is really cool to see. So let's talk about the game. Combat may look like a typical party-based tactic games, but don't be fooled. It's the most streamlined grid-based combat we've ever seen. So I know it's speaking your language already, Sev. Grid-based combat.
You said the grid thing. Whoa.
It's so simple. You can use a single button to blast through low-risk combat scenarios like an action game, but it has depth and strategy needed to overcome difficult opponents and bosses. It's as simple as choosing your action on the HUD, then pressing the corresponding button to move and attack. You can also switch between different weapons, enchantments, consumables, combat abilities, and spells. Don't like where your character plans to move? Don't worry, you can simply walk your character to a more strategic position before attacking. They've replaced the menus and text found in other party-based RPGs with a more streamlined interface. Simple actions are automated to dramatically speed up combat while preserving depth and strategy. In a typical grid-based game, a single action might take 4 to 6 clicks and multiple menus to complete. With this system they're using, your character is always targeting the closest or most recent enemy and has already chosen the simplest path to get there while the HUD manages all your actions. This means you can move and attack with just one button press. They are also developing QuickTime events, simple timed button presses to add a layer of skill and excitement. And as an added bonus, they're going to have plenty of accessibility features that allow you to tailor the whole combat experience to your liking. So I know that's already speaking to your language there.
Yeah.
I'm sure you're falling in love with this game more and more as we go down the list.
Yeah. Be still my beating heart. Gosh.
World of Vanterra has plenty of supporting mechanics to keep you busy on your journey, a dynamic event system that will spawn emergent branching side stories. Party members can spot areas of interest and track creatures from the overworld, find loot stashes and special items with hand-drawn treasure maps, fill out your bestiary to gain combat perks against different enemies, hunt for the hidden fairies and learn their wisdom, like the great fairies of Zelda, uncover and solve mysteries using your own perception and intuition, and you can also sail the sea. And just looking at the world map, man, there's several different locales to explore, right? There's like potentially a deserty area in the bottom left, a frozen area in the top left, like the grasslands in the middle, a massive continent with some islands sticking off of it. This is a pretty big world.
Yeah, I always love in maps that just like the tiny little islands that don't say anything. What can be on them? I want to go and have a look at them. Yeah.
You have no idea. You can't even read that text. It's not in our language. It's not in any language. We don't know what that language is. You need to find out yourself. And this game just looks gorgeous, man. Some of the screenshots, like the different locales that they're showing, like the sandy beaches, the grasslands, the wheatlands almost, whatever that would be. There's a big, massive tree that kind of looks like Yggdrasil. This looks real cool. This looks like a real cool game. And I like the dialogue as well. The snappy, natural-feeling dialogue system allows players to have authentic interactions with every character in the game with the least amount of text. The design is heavily inspired by retro RPGs like Ultima, which I know Frank's going to love, but modernized to meet contemporary expectations. So there's a little showcase of dialogue, about 50 seconds in this campaign. Shows the character walking up and choosing how the dialogue works. And after the character, like the NPC, says something, you can select an option on the bottom and it just dynamically changes based on what you select. Okay. Which is really freaking cool, dude.
Yeah. I'm not going to click play on it in fear that it'll run over the audio here, but I will have a look afterwards.
Yeah, check it out. The story, it says, the world of Vanterra tells a sweeping story with twists and turns that pulls inspiration from many places, including current and historical events, science, and philosophy. Don't expect walls of text, though. You will uncover the history and story of the world through your conversations, experiences, and discoveries. The narrative unfolds naturally based on the paths you choose to follow. And there is just so much content packed into this Kickstarter campaign. I cannot read it all because it would take us like 40 minutes to get through all of the stuff that's actually in here. This is a really, really solid looking game with a day-night system. The places change based on the time of day. Procedurally generated pixel art effects, multiplayer co-op, which I know Sean's gonna love, just different types of races. The music is being done by, it doesn't say who, but it sounds really joyful listening to a little bit of the snippets from the three pieces of music that they have in the Kickstarter campaign. I don't see any stretch goals, never mind, I found them. So we are looking at 25 days to go as of time of recording. They are closing in on halfway funded. They're looking for $99,712 US, and they're currently sitting at $37,529. I really fucking hope this game makes it. And if it does, they have some stretch goals already laid out. So at $130,000 of their currency, it says roll for initiative. I don't know what they would add, but it obviously would be some D&D type stuff. And then it doesn't give you like exactly what they're going to add, but at $175,000, it says plus five to happiness. So I'm assuming that, they might add a new feature, and then plus 10 to adventure at $200,000 Canadian. They might add a new area to explore, right? Plus 15 to community at $250,000, maybe some community based stuff. And then all the way up to $500,000 to party. So maybe adding a bunch of new people to recruit or something. I don't quite know. Their stretch goals are not clearly laid out. But that's because they have not been fully funded yet. So I assume once they get funded, they will, actually have some Sam Ricketts. That's the composer. I was looking because they have the team down here. So Sam Ricketts is the composer. I'm assuming once the game hits its actual initial goal, they'll actually lay out some of their stretch goals. And this game needs help. So let's get World of Vanterra funded, because it is a game that I know I really want to check out. I'm sure Sev is dying to play this game now too. And the cheapest tier to get a copy of this game on PC or available consoles when it releases is $24 US, $30 Canadian. We'll get you a digital copy of the game. And the tiers go all the way up to $300 Canadian, which gets you four copies of the game, Discord backer, digital backer, wallpaper, art book, lore book, DRM-free backer version of the soundtrack, including B-sides, playtest to select alpha builds, access to a private Discord dev channels, become the hero of Vanterra with your own in-game statue. The statue gives a special in-game reward and access to all stretch goal rewards. So that means the stretch goals might actually have some in-game rewards as well. What are you thinking on this?
Do you know, I've rolled past the activities. The activities read. There will also be activities that will act a bit more like a minigame, but will still follow our design principles. Here is a list of activities that you can expect in the final game. Fishing, hunting, resource gathering, cooking, crafting, building, treasure map hunting, berry hunts, detective work, and more. Do you know what, Brian? I think you finally got me. I think this is the one I'm going to back.
Are you going to back this game?
I'm going to back this game, yeah. Nice. Paid on Friday, I'm going to back this game. I think I'm going to spend until Friday doting over this page, reading every last little bit in it. Among like this, 100 Heroes, and was it Story of the Sea, Story of the Stars?
Oh, Sea of Stars.
Sea of Stars, that one from The Messenger. I'm so ready for those games, and now I'm so ready for this one as well.
And this is set to come out next year, too. They're looking to have this out by July of next year, so it's not even that long away. Yeah.
It's not. You watch, all three games will hit the same sort of week. I can't play all of them at the same time. Yes.
Yes, I can. I will figure out a way.
To be fair, if this one, you only have to play, you only need one button to do the combat, then I'm sure I can do that.
Yeah. Two games at once, yeah. Play one with your foot and one with your hands.
I think we can do it.
Cool. Go check this out. Let's get it funded. Let's get it funded. Let's get it the help that it needs to get to its initial funding goal. Go check it out. Kickstarter.com. The name of this game is World of Antera. And Sev, we've done almost two-hour podcasts in a row here. This was a lengthy recording session, but I think that's going to bring us to the close of Max Level. And did you want to play with Kyle's PP?
I'm never going to play with Kyle's PP. It's not worthy.
Then hit us with your closing. Take us out the way that you do.
So the way that I do is with some famous last words, and these are Da Vinci's last words, but they'll probably be mine as well. And he says, "I have offended God and mankind because my work did not reach the quality it should have."
This episode of the Max Level Podcast has been brought to you by RPGera.com. Please remember to leave us a rating and a review, regardless of where you're listening. If you want more of us, check us out on YouTube and Twitch, and make sure you're subscribed or following at both places with notifications on. Links to where we can be found on social media, as well as to our Discord server, and all other important information can be found in the show notes for this episode.